Okay, so, last but not least, earlier today we had a PGP key signing. Now, this is a little ritual that's done fairly frequently at events along these lines. But interestingly, really, no one really knows what to do with that data. I mean, you have data of information about who signed whose keys when, or what purported person signed what other person's keys when, but really, hardly anyone has a very good idea of what to make of this data about how much you trust what. So, one of the very few projects, which is actually trying to implement a distributed trust system and see what happens when you have one, and try and make it attack resistant and see what happens when there are attacks, is Advogado, which is run by Ray Sylvain here, who incidentally maintains GhostScript in his day job. Yeah,
it's a 1600 by 1200 res, but it should be fitting in. Ta-da!
So here's Ray.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for staying. I had a dream last night that that everybody walked out after a poignant question from a guy who works at Microsoft Research. So thanks for staying so far, and please, if you could refrain from walking out, that would help me not freak out. All right. So I'm going to present basically Advogado and the trust metric that really serves as its core and the whole reason why I built Advogado. Advogado, see, I can't see my laptop, so I'm going to see if I can know if I can get both of these at the same time.
No signal.
It's lame. I need my mouse. All right, this is bad. Very bad. I know. Okay, all right, at least I have a next button now.
Okay.
All right, so that's the outline of what I'm going to talk about. I think it's more or less what I am going to talk about, but we'll see. Okay. So what is a trust metric, right?
Yeah. You know, I think maybe deep down there.
Yeah. Except they can't see the mouse, so it's kind of really screwed. all right. Okay. So what does a trust metric do? The simplest trust metric very simply determines membership in a community. So in the case of Advogado, Advogado is a site that that is for the free software community, for people who do free software development. So you've got a community of some people who do that, and a lot of people who don't want to be users, some nice, some not. In any case, Advogado is for the people who really are. So the input to a trust metric is a graph of certifications. Person A says Person B is actually a member of this community. And when you're actually evaluating a trust metric, the other input that you see is a single node, which is the root of the trust. So you're saying, from the point of view of this one person in the graph, who is actually a member of the community? The input to this trust metric is usually manually generated. So, you know, person A is asserting that person B really is a free software developer. That's something that person A is going to enter on the UI. The output is a set of accepted nodes, essentially yes or no decision for each person of whether they are a member of the community. I was going to click on the Advogado link, but because we don't seem to be able to get the screen and the thing at the same time, we'll just go next. Alright, so the claim to fame of the trust metric is that it's actually attack resistant. It is attack resistant. It has an attack resistance property. And one of my claims is that it has this, and another claim is that this is rare, that very few systems have any kind of meaningful attack resistance property. So the assumption is that the input data is not 100% perfect and clean. If the input data was 100% perfect and clean, you wouldn't need a trust metric. You could just accept everything on face value and say, okay, this person says they're a free software developer, so sure, no problem.
Sure.
And, you know, what it means for the input data to be under attack is actually very, very, is very interesting because there's a lot of different reasons why you might consider that data to not be very clean. Obviously, you might have a malicious attack, somebody who wants to bring your site down or has some beef against it or whatever. And that was kind of the main thing that I was thinking about when I designed these trust metrics. But in practice, I haven't seen very much of it. It doesn't, it probably would have worked pretty well against that, but it hasn't really been tested against it. Another one is spammers. I mean, you know, people are spamming and abusing the internet in all kinds of creative ways. And I think that in terms of the future of, you know, why people are going to want to deploy these trust metrics, it's largely because of the spam problem. Another thing that was a little surprising is that my users are not stupid. I said stupid users here. In fact, I have one of the smartest user bases of any open hosted, you know, type service out there. Free software developers are smart. But there is still a lot of not really paying attention to exactly the guidelines that I wrote for what certifications mean, and a lot of, you know, I mean, you look at the data and it's pretty noisy, and a lot of it is people, you know, I mean, the thing is, it's a very wide open system. There's no central administrative domain where I'm the registrar of a university and I can go to somebody and say, hey, you know, that cert that you entered, that might not have been such a great idea. And then one of the last ways in which, you know, input data might be considered to be under attack is that there might be a legitimate controversy. So we haven't really run into this on Advogado, but, you know, Advogado has a mission statement that says, you know, your rating is based on your contribution to free software. So what would happen if, you know, say Apple's with their APSL. Some people think that's free software, other people don't. So there could be this huge controversy where there are two groups of people who have different definitions of what membership in the free software community actually means. And a good trust metric, you know, should do something. I mean, it's an interesting question. What do you do? And we'll answer that somewhere. So the goal is, a pretty good assumption is that your data is not clean coming in. So the goal of an attack-resistant trust metric is that you get high-quality results out anyway. And what we're really talking about doing is having a relationship between the quality of the input data and the quality of the output data so that there's a bound on exactly how bad the results of the output can get. Next, please. Okay. Right. So I really want to do this very quantitatively. And I think a lot of what makes my research good is, and I'm not just saying, oh, I'm going to hack this trust metric together and it's going to be attack resistant and you'll all be resistant and you'll all leave me because I'm very smart. I really want to have a quantitative framework where I say, okay, an attack is, I can put a number to an attack. How many of the nodes are compromised? How many of the edges are compromised? There are definitions and meanings for all these concepts, which unfortunately you have to go to my draft thesis to really understand. But the key thing is that there are high-cost attacks and there's low-cost attacks. So a high-cost attack would be for somebody to root my laptop, which they did, by the way, just before my talk. Thank you, Eric Johansson, whoever you are. It's a realistic attack. I mean, you know, he could have gone in and, you know, sucked out all of my passwords and logged in Avogadro and created, you know, bogus edges. And that would have counted as the first of the attack criteria in the malicious attack. But even so, that's a high-cost attack. And then you've got low-cost attacks, which is people signing up for a million accounts and, you know, putting in all kinds of data through open web interfaces. And, you know, most systems are pretty susceptible to these low-cost attacks. So what the attack resistance property gives you is, as I say, a relationship where this cost quantification has to be realistic. Assuming it is realistic, so that you have a number N associated with how much did that attack cost, you want no more than F of N, some relationship of that number N of the nodes that are accepted by the trust metric to be bad. You want most of them to be good, some of them bad. So good, with a good trust metric, like the kind that I'm selling, You know, that F of N is linear, and it's small. It's a pretty tight bound. For systems that do not have attack resistance, you have a graph that looks like, you know, it has catastrophic failure. As soon as you've figured out the secret, as soon as you've gotten enough, you know, enough compromise of the system, the whole thing falls apart. I don't have to go, you know, give examples, but I think DNS is really one of the most beautiful examples of that, and VeriSign is, you know, a single point of failure in the whole system. Next point, please. I'm really proud of Advogato. I mean, it's one of the ways of looking at it is that it's an openly hosted blog engine. And if you look at the quality of who posts on there and how interesting it is and what kind of community it's formed compared with other openly hosted blog engines, it's pretty good. And the amount of abuse and spam and just stupidity that you have to contend with when you go to the site is really small, and what I think I'm most proud of is that's not because there's, you know, an army of people who spend, you know, all their time sifting through the good stuff. I don't admin the site at all, okay? It just works. So, it, you know, I think you can make a pretty strong case that this does work. But, next slide, please. But I'd like to, you know, to go into a little bit more detail of what do I mean when I say the trust metric works. So a trust metric, to apply a trust metric, you really want to ask a clear question. And in the case of Advogato, you can say it in two lines. Who of the users are really free software developers? Who are members of this community? And posed so crisply like this, a trust metric will give you an answer. And to interpret the question, to interpret the answer, you know, you look at the bound. How many of the nodes that get accepted are valid and how many of them are not valid? And the answer is not perfection, right? If the thing comes back and says, okay, this person is a member of the free software community, they might not be. It's not going to solve that problem. And as a matter of fact, I've got this example. I don't know, for people who have followed Advogato, we had a troll about 3 or 4 months ago. And he has a journeyer. There's a apprentice journeyer master certification hierarchy. And he has the middle of that. And he deserves it about, well, he doesn't. So, you know, I was pointing this, you know, out as just an example of, you know, how the trust metric is not perfect and won't necessarily solve all of your problems. All right. So basically, when you look at the community membership trust metric, there's two trust metrics in Advogato, and this is the first one. And if you look at the implementation of it within Advogato, it's not really ideal. That, you know, I say I'm putting a bound on the number of bad accounts, but, you know, it doesn't take very many bad accounts to create a lot of noise and hassle and so on and so forth. And so, you know, the other thing that people who follow Advogato talk about a lot is cert inflation, right? That there are people who are clearly not deserving of the certs that they get. So one way of looking at this is that it's a mismatch between what the trust metric is actually computing, which is based on giving you this bound on the number of bad nodes, and what you really want as the result. Could you next? So a better question, if the goal is something like Advogato, where you're posting blog entries, diary entries, or whatever entries, or the question you really want to ask is not, is this person a member of the community in a way that you can only answer that somewhat imprecisely, but how interesting is their diary? And this is a closer match to the goal of what you're actually trying to accomplish on the site. You're not, you know, what you're really trying to do is keep this uninteresting stuff, whether you want to define it as spam uninteresting or just the person doesn't write very well. You want to keep that off the recent log so that people aren't spamming you with it. Next, please, it's the left mouse button.
Did I get it?
No. Oh, yes. Yes, wait, thank you. Right. So the second trust metric that Advogado implements is something, this is more recent, I forget exactly when this got implemented, sometime last year, and it's a generic engine for evaluating metadata. And it's based on eigenvectors, which you'll probably be hearing more about later. And it's computing something different. So if you look at what the inputs and the outputs are, you still have the certification graph. You still have the assertions. I say somebody else is, you know, my friend or trustworthy or whatever. And then you've got these assertions. I say that this guy's diary rates a 1 on a 1 to 10 scale. I think, frankly, that might be generous, but hopefully he's not listening. So the output of this eigenvector engine now is you've got these assertions that are coming in, and it's basically telling you a confidence value. Do I really believe, all these assertions are coming in, which ones do I really believe? And when the assertions are rating, like on a 1 to 10 numeric scale, then instead of having tons and tons of assertions, you distill that down basically into a weighted average where the weight is this confidence value. So then when you look it up, you get, his entries of 1.2, which is definitely degenerate. So this solves the certification in the cert inflation problem now. Because basically, with the group membership, I really only had a certification that says, yes, this person is a member of the community. I don't have any way of putting negative information to say this guy's overrated, this guy, doesn't deserve it, whatever. And with an eigenvector metadata engine like this, you do get to put that information in. And it has a very definite effect on the result. Another advantage of this over the first trust metric, I don't know how important it is, whether you consider it technical, but it happens to be deterministic. So the same inputs, you always get the same output. The first one really isn't. So let's see, can we click the link that's at the bottom of the page? This is painful. Yeah, down, to the right, up a little. Down just a tad. Okay, click it. All right. Now we'll see how long it, okay, it's fast. Great. So what you see here, this is the raw report, okay, of the ratings of the system, and it's basically telling you the aggregate, rating value. It's telling you a variance, how much controversy there is. So, for example, if you look at TK, Oh, script alert too. Yeah, that's great. it's D6. Otherwise, it would have popped up in the alert box, right? which, of course, it did, but that's big enough. So if you look at, for example, D/TK, that's TK, I forget his name, he's in Singapore. Anyway, he's a pretty controversial guy. He says a lot of good things, he says some bad things. So he's got a plus or minus 2.8 variance on his, which is a lot. And if you look at most of the other people here, I don't know who all these people are, but, a lot of them have much smaller variances. And then there's the confidence value, and essentially what that's telling you is how far away it is from you in the cert graph. And see where it says reporting node rate? That's my view of the graph. So if you did a report from anywhere else, starting from any other node, you'd see their view. So this comes back to the question of what if you have a legitimate controversy? So then the answer is, it depends on what you use as a trust seed. So if you use somebody who thinks that the APSL is free software, then you get answers consistent with that. If you use as your trust seed somebody who feels that it isn't, you get answers consistent with that. It's alt left arrow to go back. Mozilla. Thank you, good. And now we've got to do the up and really? Okay, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the left, a little bit down, there we go, up, just there we go, and next. So does it work? Yes. And I think you can make a case that this actually works better than the first trust metric that if you're looking at the question of do these ratings really correspond to how interesting the diary is? You know, I think, you know, it's the site's out there. Go and check these things. Don't believe my bold claims. Go and check them. But in general, when I go through it, I don't have this reaction of like, oh wow, that's so wrong. You know, this person, you know, it says it's interesting to a, you know, 8, but it's balderdash or vice versa. It computes something, and what it computes is valid. Next slide, please. Right. So this is a half hour talk. Next slide. I'm not going to go into the detail of what kind of math goes in here. But if you're interested in this stuff, if you're doing, you know, social trust things, this is what you have to know. If you're unwilling to learn this, I don't want to talk to you, really. You have to learn network flow theory, which is really, you know, it's very basic. It's important to know. You have to learn about eigenvectors, right? Eigenvectors are the mathematical basis behind PageRank and also the trust metrics that I'm proposing. And you have to know about power law networks. This is just basic stuff. Much more recently, I mean, when I started doing this stuff, I didn't know any social network theory, but I've been learning it as I go along. And you don't know why stuff works or why stuff doesn't work unless you know the social network theory behind it. And a lot of the social network theory that I've been learning is counterintuitive. I knew the small world theory, you know, people are only 6 degrees of separation from each other. But there are other things that have very profound effects. I was talking to Vipul Prakash a couple days ago at the party, and he said something that I just love the sound of. Networks are young. You know, we've only had a network that can interchange data for a few years that people use, you know, that everybody uses. It's only just happened, and we haven't even started with, you know, what are the social networks, you know, all the different overlays of social networks, and how do those map to these computer networks? And I think, you know, this is where it's happening. I'm biased. Next slide, please. So, again, you know, I've got a site, which is a fairly small scale deployment. I mean, it's not a lot of work. It's, you know, I didn't try and ride the .com, you know, wave or anything like that. It's pretty much just me. And I think the trust metric works pretty well in it. And not a lot of people have been deploying trust metrics. So what I'm going to do here is just sort of, you know, are you thinking of deploying a trust metric? You know, how's it gonna work for you? What's it gonna do for you? So the most important thing to do is to pose your question clearly. The wrong thing to do is say, oh, trust metrics are cool, I want to integrate one, because if you don't know what your, you know, what the goal is, your chance of success is very, very slim. So the next thing is you have to provide it adequate input. And, you know, in the case of Avogadro, I just built a web interface where you put in the graph information, the certification information. And in general, I'm a big fan of having manual input. I mean, people are generally willing to put in information if it's going to be used, it's going to be processed in some kind of meaningful way. So the trust metric automates an evaluation of something. So you have this question, how interesting is this person's diary? And you really have to look at that in competition with a manual evaluation of the same thing. A manual evaluation might be better, but there's got to be some reason. Why are you looking at the automated evaluation of this question? I mean, how interesting is person N's diary? You could just have a thing where everybody gets to decide that completely fine-grained on their own. And, you know, that's actually how a lot of these things work. That's basically how blogs work. Blogs do not have high-tech reputation mechanisms in them, but people, for some strange reason, generally are able to go and find the content that they want to read. So you have to answer that question. Why does it need to be automated? And then the last thing that's really important is that you have to take this data that comes back from the trust metric and use it in the application in a way that makes sense. If it's doing an authentication decision, then, you know, it has to match so that, you know, when the trust metric says that the authentication token is okay, that has to be something that makes sense in the application. Next slide, please. So another success story of trust metrics is Google. It's Google. And if you go through this recipe, then, you know, it works out really well. So pose the question clearly. How highly regarded is URL N? I mean, there's 3 billion plus URLs on the web. And, you know, a lot of them are crap and some of them are very good, and basically that's what you want to do. Providing the adequate input is also very central, and in Google's case, it comes from two sources, both of which are very important. And the first is that they spider the web, spend a lot of money and time doing it, and they extract this link graph. And so essentially every time you type Ahref into your VI before you FTP it to your website, you're doing... Well, most people FTP to their website. You FTP to yours, okay? anytime anybody generates a link using no matter what technique, they're also typing in to Google's input, to their trust metric, to their page rank evaluation, this web page links to that. And that's a hugely valuable resource, and a large part of why Google is cool is that instead of ignoring that resource, they exploit it. And the other piece of adequate input that's really important in Google's case that I don't know that it gets quite as much attention is that, you know, the trust metric always starts from a seed node. It isn't an absolute thing. It says from the point of view of this particular start node, you know, tracing from there what gets accepted by the trust metric. And so a very important thing is to start with a good set of seed nodes. I don't know what Google uses exactly, but I would suspect that DMoz is a big part of it, because DMoz is a database of, I don't know, 100,000, you know, some 100,000 links, and all of them got in there, you know, because they're pretty good. I mean, there's a process for editors and so on and so forth. There's not a lot of garbage in DMoz. So if you start from a good, you know, collection, a big but not huge collection of links, and trace the trust metric from there, you'll get way better results than if you start at some random node or if you start at just one. And, you know, there's a lot of detail in how do you choose this set of nodes that I think is very interesting, but obviously I don't have time to get into. Now, this question of why does it need to be automated? Well, in Google's case, that's really obvious. People do a search, you know, search on Google, and it might very well be the first time that search term ever got typed into Google, and it tells you the answer in about 100 milliseconds searching over a 3 billion node data set. Well, that's impressive as hell. And, you know, again, you can imagine manual people going through, you know, tons of links, but it's just, you know, it would be completely unwieldy to do that in reality. And then the last bit of it is, you know, again, Google is not just a web service on top of PageRank. Google is a whole suite of things that are used to spider those sites and to lexically analyze the page to figure out, you know, how likely those keywords are to mean things, and reporting the results in context and having a good UI. And all that stuff is really good in Google. So I think, you know, Google wouldn't be anywhere nearly as good without the PageRank. But the converse is, if it was just PageRank, it still wouldn't be that good. Next slide, please. So, what? Google is just an instance of this thing that I invented, a trust metric? Yes, in fact they are. I'm not claiming, of course, to have invented PageRank. I didn't. That was, you know, Sergey Brin and Larry Page and Terry Winograd and, actually I forget the fourth co-author off the top of my head. Those guys, you know, they did something really cool. So what I'm claiming as my contribution is that I've done this quantitative framework for analyzing what attack resistance means. And I've done a network flow based, you know, there are two instances that I know of what's an attack resistant trust metric now. And the first is network flow based, which I came up with. And the other is eigenvector based, which PageRank is an instance of, and also the IBM Clever work and a few other things. So, you know, eigenvectors are a pretty general tool for this. Another thing that I'm claiming to have done is actually analyzed. You know, I can explain why Google is attack resistant, and I don't know of anybody else who's published that kind of research. I'm sure the research has been done, but I'm the only one that I know of who's really doing this analysis and publishing my results openly. So, I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, copyrights and patents. Most people would say intellectual property, but that's kind of bad terminology. So, my code is GPL. You know, go ahead and use it. The ideas are in the public domain, whereas PageRank is patented. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but if you did go and pay a lot of money to a lawyer, then they'd probably tell you that the eigenvector metadata engine in Avogadro is sufficiently different than PageRank that it probably would not infringe the patent. And what do you? Oh, okay. So, oh well, okay. So, you have to check with a lawyer about that. And it's very complicated, and this could become a very painful state, but one of the things that I'm trying to do is get all of my work out there completely in the open so that it's really done with academic integrity. Go ahead and just, never mind. Too subtle. Next, please. Yeah. So as I say, I've got these trust metrics implemented in one system, and I'd really like now for the rest of the world to adopt it and start deploying it in other applications. So all of these are phrased in terms of what question is the trust metric answering? What's a good book to read? What's a good song to listen to? Is this a good backlink? You know, if somebody links to my blog, are they some idiot who I don't want to backlink? Or all right. Next page, please. Yeah. You really, if you just had completely open backlinks, then those would tend to get abused pretty heavily. So you really want a system that tells you what are the good backlinks that people are going to want to follow. If you've got a peer-to-peer network, right, like, for example, YouServe is a really nice system, and, you know, you've got this question where you ask somebody, you know, please replicate my content, and, you know, they could go ahead and cheat you and put bad content up. And most people, is it refreshing on its own or what? Okay, hit the next button. You want to know just whether the person runs an honest server or not. And a trust metric is a good way to do that. And then there's spam, and then there's spam, and there's e-commerce. You know, you have these questions. Yeah. Is this guy spammer? You want to know the answer to that, yes or no? Okay. So if trust metrics are so good, why haven't they taken over the world, right? Good question. Well, there's some answers to this. First of all, trust metrics are not easy. There really is some difficult math behind them. And then if you want to do, I mean, like the trust metrics that I've done are in a centralized web server type of context. And I think where they really get interested is when they're in peer-to-peer networks. But that's a hard problem. You get into a lot of, okay, I edited my page and I didn't edit the refresh thing out, so, okay, never mind. It's just gonna keep telling, reminding me of that for the whole rest of the talk, which is fortunately very brief. Doing a distributed implementation of this trust metric is really where things get interesting, but designing a peer-to-peer network in general is hard. And, having all of these properties and not being able to leverage on things like DNS, which are not trustworthy, makes things even harder. So I have a lot of ideas about how to do a distributed trust metric, but it gets a lot more speculative and a lot harder. So the next reason why they haven't taken over the world is I'm busy. I don't do this as my day job or even, for that matter, much of my night job. I'm the maintainer of GhostScript. I have a lot of things that I do. So it's fascinating. I really want to keep the research going, but it certainly means that I do not have the time to implement systems, to get out there and put the, you know, put the rubber on the road and get these things deployed. So that's why I'm standing in front of you. The next step to get these trust metrics, you know, built into real systems and solving real world problems is up to the coders in the audience here. And if it's something that looks appealing, let's get in touch. I think that's the end of my prepared talk, and I'd be happy to field questions.
So, you know, the first comment to be made is like, is Google is able to work because they have a huge farm of machines, right? And that's kind of cost prohibitive for most of us. So what if someone were to implement a system like Avogadro that only used very, very, very recent data, like blogs, and implemented Avogadro or your eigenvector approach only in that space so that the data set was specifically a lot smaller and implemented in like a peer-to-peer distributed fashion? Could it compete with Google? That's the trick. Could it be a replacement for Google?
Right. Well, I think the first part of the question answers the second part. If you're only actually tracing a fairly small data set in order to make the problem more realistic, then it's not competing with Google because, you know, 90% of what makes Google so cool is how comprehensive it is. To answer a slightly different question, could this be a useful service? You know, would this be cool to implement? I think the answer is yes, and I think the only way to know for sure is to go out and implement it.
So I had a question. Do you think it would be fair to characterize the thing that you can do with trust metrics is allow a user to make a choice between options? Because it seems to, except for maybe rating, which really just seems a way of hiding that they're making a choice, what they do in all cases allow you to choose between one or two or more options.
Choosing between options. I think the way I'd answer that is that it's automating something that's ordinarily that otherwise would be a manual decision. So yeah, I mean the decision to read somebody's diary or not to read somebody's diary is something that in most systems would just simply be a manual choice. The trust metric is automating that, but I don't think that I think when you're looking at it really generally, I don't think the right way of looking at it is just a choice-making tool. The real thing that a trust metric is a resource allocation tool, where in the context of something like Avogadro, the resource is your attention, right? But there's a lot of other resources out there, like, you know, being able to ring your cell phone, being able to, you know, share your printer or your bandwidth or something like that, that, you know, maybe they're choices in the sense that ordinarily you'd use some configuration tool. But what you're really trying to do is allocate resources better than you do if you just open it up.
Yeah, this is really cool stuff. But I did have one question. Maybe I missed it in your talk. I was always under the impression that PageRank was a rather attack-resistant method for, as you mentioned, establishing a trust metric as well. So when do I use PageRank and when do I use Avogadro?
Well, the first answer to that is that you use PageRank after you clear it with the Google attorneys, okay? for the academic part of that question, that's a really good one. There are different flavors of trust metric, and they have different properties. If you look at, in general, the network flow-based ones versus the eigenvector ones, the network flow ones are much easier to compute. They're actually easier in some ways to analyze. They give you very, very crisp bounds on things. But they're not deterministic. And if you are concerned about this sort of cert inflation type problem, they are somewhat vulnerable to that. So the eigenvector one is more general. It's more compute intensive. It's also totally what you want to do if you want to have some kind of fuzzy, you know, confidence value thing where you're not making a yes or no decision, but maybe on some kind of scale. But it's a really good question, and there may be other variants of trust metrics that we haven't explored yet that might have properties that make them, you know, that make better for other applications.
So I'm another one of these peer-to-peer designers that you were talking about, and one of the things that I really want to do is try to figure out which nodes are honest and how many are honest. And I'd really like to be able to quantify the protection I get from the trust metric. And I agree with you that it's really critical to be able to do that. And some of the steps you have for quantifying it are how many bad nodes have signed up and how many good nodes can you trick into certifying bad nodes. One of the things that's really missing in being able to quantify how hard the attack is, and this is why I haven't actually pursued using these systems, I can't really quantify what it means to attack somebody close to the trust seeds or far from the trust seeds. Obviously, the attack is not very effective if you compromise somebody far from the seed.
Right.
And it's very, very effective if you compromise the seed, and they're somewhere in between.
That's right. That's absolutely true. And so that's something that's very heavily dependent on what the application is, because in Advogado, there are two different trust metrics that have two totally different policies about what the seed is. It's not innate to the metric itself. But there's the Advogado website, which actually has four nodes that are considered to be seeds. And it is absolutely true that if you go in and attack those nodes, then the website will be far more vulnerable to noise. But in the other application, the seed is totally distributed. So everybody that is, everybody that's using this trust metric says, well, I am the seed, so if people next to me in the network get compromised, then it will affect what I get out of the trust metric, but if somebody far away gets compromised, it doesn't. So when we're talking about this sort of resource allocation thing, what you don't want to do is put a huge amount of resources attached to one seed so that if something close to that gets compromised, you've badly allocated a lot of resources. You want to distribute that around as much as possible. So each cell phone that rings, has its own seed that gets to decide that, so that one person can't come in and make the entire system, fall apart.
I think that's a good rule of thumb. Do you have any approaches for quantifying it so I can actually start saying this is how hard it is to attack in this situation?
Yes, I think that if you go into the analysis, that's in my semi-published literature on this, that it does give you the framework for what the relation is about the distance from the seed and how much of an effect that can have.
So I have a question, actually.
Please.
You showed diary ratings as being calculated by a mean value. Have you considered switching that to a median value?
I have indeed. I wonder why. Oh, it's because Graham suggested it a few weeks ago. And of course, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting, things that I'd like to see researched and explored as a way of making these things even better. And I think Graham has some great ideas. He has, he's got this hybrid thing that he's blogged a little bit about in his Advogado diary. And I think if anybody really gets deeply into this, they should look at that stuff too. The only problem is that when you start going down this route, you do get into a question of how expensive it is to compute. And already Advogado is kind of stretching the machine that it's on.
So why three certifications instead of, say, 5 or 10?
Why the apprentice, journeyer, master as opposed to a different granularity? No reason. I just wanted something really simple and understandable. And I think also I wanted to emphasize that I didn't consider this to be a really fine-grained, high-precision metric. If you're only shipping 1.5 bits of data, then nobody's going to look at it and say, I only got this and I should have gotten that, I really, especially in the early days of the site, I had a problem with people taking it far too seriously.
So I've been working on this trust metric that one of the properties is a compromise detection, so that as the network is being normalized, it will detect if I certify someone and then their certifications disagree with my certification, that person's cert is lower. Have you thought about implementing a compromise detection? So if it looks like someone has been compromised, you lower their certification?
Yeah, I've certainly thought about that. And, if you've got manual input that's generating this thing, then then you get into this really, the analysis gets really complicated because now the network has dynamic effects that, you know, if something happens to the network, then that's going to affect what the input that people put in is going to be. So it gets much harder to analyze. And I've really been trying to do this from the point of view of how can I make something that you can analyze crisply rather than, you know, really from the academic point of view, rather than, you know, I'm trying to build a business out of this and make it so that it kind of tries, you know, uses lots of heuristics to try and do the right thing in most cases. I think to really make a successful, you know, a successful deployment of a trust metric, you want to take the pure idea and merge it with a lot of those kinds of heuristics, you know, things that are doing attack, you know, compromise detection or, you know, whatever it is. And it's really the combination of those that's going to give you the best result at the end of the day. But I haven't done that work myself.
So we have time for two more questions.
I was thinking about what you might call strategic behavior, where people who are rating in the trust metric decide to rate for a reason other than because they actually believe that that's the rating that the person deserves.
Gaming the system, yes.
There are various ways that could happen. One, of course, is just that they're mad at someone. And so they actually think that the person is very clever or is a member of the community, but they hate the person and they want to cause the person's rating to suffer. And another example, thinking like of Kenneth Arrow's work on voting systems, is that people might collude and might say, you know, I'll rate you this way if you rate me that way, or if you rate my enemy down, and I'll trade you my rating points for your rating points. And I'm wondering what the effect of strategic behavior is on the Advogado trust metric and trust metrics in general, and then whether there's anything you can do about it or to mitigate its impact.
Well, so there's a really good book on this called Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. So yes, absolutely. And you know, we saw a little bit of that. There was a guy on Advogado about a year and a half ago who said, you know, hey, anybody who certs me, I'll cert them back. And this was definitely a way of gaming the system. But I think there's a good answer to that, which is to say that you don't have to analyze this separately from all of the other kinds of attacks, if you will. That it's a deviation from your ideal, what you want, input, which is to say, you know, based on the criteria that are on the site or whatever, right? So, if a few people are doing it, then it's a small-scale attack and it won't have a huge impact on the results of the trust metric. If most people are doing it, well, then there's a problem. Okay, but this is going to be true in general. You know, if there's a large scale deviation where lots and lots and lots of people are putting in input that's not what they're supposed to be doing, then the output is not trustworthy. So that might be more of a, I don't know. I mean, you know, it depends on the scale. So if it's small scale, it's all good. If it's large scale, then you've got a social scale, then you've got a social problem, not a problem with the trust metric technology. Is there a part of that that I missed? The question? I think I got it.
My question had to do with, or actually it was kind of an observation, that the number of seeds you choose depends a lot on what the purpose you hope to achieve with your trust metric is. For example, with Advogado, for determining who gets to post stuff on the site and possibly create noise, it makes perfect sense to have a small number of seeds that are sort of like editors or people who make decisions as to the entire site. But for the diary interest thing, it also makes sense for everybody to be their own seed.
You're giving me far too much credit in that I've chosen these things based on, you know, what makes sense. Those kind of things really are more historical accident, and I don't even think you can make a strong argument that those are the best choices, best policy choices, best about seeds that could be made. Gotta keep in mind, those four seeds that I chose, most of them are not very active in making those decisions themselves. It's just a way to get the thing bootstrapped so that the people who are on the site every day can make those kind of decisions.
Okay, well thank you, Rich.
Thank you. And thank you for not walking out on that.